Hello, hello. Welcome to the 360 Method, the Autism 360 podcast, where we chat about everything that's going on in the program. We chat with team members and we talk about all things mindset, as well as exploring relevant ideas that autism parents think about. This week, we're back with our talented and delightful speech pathologist, Joe, who has a special interest in echolalia and loves to support families with understanding how they can turn their echolalia into a positive for their child's communication. Thank you for being back on the show, Joe.
Hi, Ella. Thanks for having me back today.
Yeah, I'm super excited to get into a deep dive on echolalia strategies today. I'm your host, Ella Bailey. I'm an Autism 360 veteran coach and explorer of all things parenting support. So welcome to you, our lovely listeners. We care about you and your thoughts, your experiences. So whether you're a program member or not, we would love to hear from you. Please drop us a line at hello@autism360.com. We love your feedback all the time. Does your kiddo show signs of echolalia? Have you tried one of these strategies? We would love to hear from you. Before we get started, I'd like to acknowledge the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, on whose land I live and work, and from where this podcast is being broadcast today, and also make the disclaimer that this podcast does not substitute for medical advice. If you have concerns about your kiddo or if you need some support, please do contact your medical or allied health professionals. So, Joe, we get to do a deep dive, nerd out.
Yeah, awesome. It's really great to actually be able to go in a little bit deeper and give some real functional strategies for our parents at this point. Yeah,
absolutely. So this is part two of our chat about echolalia. And today, Joe's going to talk us through some more strategies that if your kiddo is using echolalia as a communication tool, how you can help use that to develop their communication. So where would you like to start? Where do you think parents and carers should start with this?
There are many different strategies. If you go on to, you know, different people's websites, different speech pathologists, you'll find a lot of different strategies and a lot of different mindsets. So what we might do in speech pathology in terms of strategies will differ from what they might do in like an ABA approach. Both are completely relevant. It's very much a personal choice which way you would like to go. Often they work really well together. So if you do see an ABA therapist, it's also completely relevant to also see speech therapy, and we come from a functional communicative approach and we can work together in that. So you will come across a lot of different information, but the underlying principles should essentially be the same. So I come from a speech therapy approach. So I like to use the echolalia to help build a child's functional language ability. And one really good way to do this is let's start being mindful of our words. So what we actually say to our children and how we communicate with them. It's very, very difficult. And I always acknowledge this with my parents. It's very hard to change our own habits. So as adults who have possibly neurotypical way of learning language, we've learned to communicate. We can talk fast. We figured language out. So often when we talk back to our children, we talk to them in that same adult way of speaking. And our children just can't cope with that much adult talk. So we want to be really mindful to start thinking about the simple ways in which we can drill language back so that our children have a better chance of kind of taking that on board. So being mindful about our words. So I guess, for example, saying things. So if you have a child who does have, immediate echolalia. I'm so sorry.
Oh, yes,
immediate echolalia. If you have a child who has immediate echolalia, so an example of this would be you would say to your child, do you want juice? So you've already established that, and as parents, we know what our children need. Even if they are from a non-verbal or non-speaking background, we as parents can know when our children are thirsty. We preempt that need and we ask the question. So you might say, do you want juice? And their way of saying yes will be to repeat back, do you want juice? So that's their echolalia. That's a common characteristic that we often see. So like I said before, you've already kind of established that they want juice. So what we want to do here is to teach them to say it as if they could say it or as if they could ask it. Now, this is a Hannon strategy that's really great. And if you haven't heard of the Hannon Center, H-A-N-E-N, I would deeply recommend you go onto their website, and they have some amazing tips about echolalia. So this is one of theirs. So say it as if they could say it. So that would be, so this is how you would rephrase it. So instead of saying, do you want juice? You would go, I want juice. I want juice. So mm-hmm. you're giving them the script
yeah.
in order to functionally ask for something of desire.
Okay.
It's yeah. So that's kind of one example of how you can kind of be mindful or reframe what you say.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned that it's hard to kind of reteach yourself to use language in a different way. I remember when I was back in the day, a baby behavior therapist, that was one of the things that really got drilled into us. Make statements, don't ask questions. You're yeah. asking too many questions. Make statements, mm-hmm. don't ask questions.
Yep.
And one of the things that one of my supervisors at the time said really helped the adults to remind themselves that they need to be making statements or comments or giving scripts was to pair it with a gesture. So yes. I don't know if that's a thing that is helpful or not,
yeah.
but we're taught like to use more or less or yes or no
yes.
to support that
definitely.
Way of speaking and almost yeah. use it as a visual cue for ourselves. Remember, yes. don't yep. make, don't ask questions, make statements.
Yeah. This also gives, this can be also applied more broadly to even if our children on the spectrum aren't using echolalia a lot, using a visual cue such as keyword sign, or something else where your hands are moving. You can learn, it's a really good thing to learn some basic keyword sign, and your speech pathologist can help you with that. Even if it's just around drink, eat, you're naturally drawn to looking at your hand, like someone's naturally drawn to looking at your hands move while you're talking. And what you're doing is, when you say a word to a child, it's in and out. So it's verbal, it's in and out, and there's no lasting memory of it for them. But when you use other modalities such as visuals or pairing it with keyword sign, you're giving them more of an opportunity to actually solidify that word, or it's just that extra input that our kids need often. So very big advocate of using keyword sign as you're trying to teach. And look, I definitely have a big chunk of parents who are really reluctant to use keyword signing or any other type of kind of nonverbal means to help their child learn. And then I guess it's just about saying, oh, being really honest with your therapist and saying, these are the reasons why I'm a bit worried to introduce visuals or keyword signing. And then your therapist can kind of, I really like to talk about the why with my parents. So really going down to that level and saying, hey, this is what the research says can really help in that way. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And I mean, you mentioned that keyword sign or I guess a little bit of Auslan or something might be helpful as something that gives our kiddos longer time to process that communication strategy.
Yep.
Are there others? What are some other things that you would add in or do add in?
I guess my biggest advice would be even if your child is kind of halfway functional and still using some echolalia, keep using the visuals would be my biggest thing. If by maybe 3 or 4 years old, you're not using visuals, I would maybe start considering using visuals. That would be my biggest thing. So introducing them as early as you can is also really important.
Yeah.
So and don't forget visuals can be high or low tech, and that's also have a talk to your speech pathologist because they're the ones really who will do a bit of a, more of an assessment of where your child's at with their speech and language. So that's really important. They'll talk to you about the characteristics that you're seeing at home. And the best thing is to be open because often we feel like we need to hide things that may be happening. And I just want to say to our parents, make sure you're just really honest and open about what you're seeing there'll always be a supportive and understanding person on the other end. So then in that way, we're able to guide treatment a bit better if we know exactly what's going on at home.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. I've been in a similar situation where a parent has not understood properly and therefore not implemented in a helpful way, and therefore it's caused issues and those sorts of things. I'd love to know a little bit more about, you know, the role that visuals or maybe AAC, high tech, low tech, play in developing echolalia as a communication strategy.
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways to do things. So I've seen some speech pathologists when a child has been given an iPad for communication, for example, they've actually put their gestalts, or that that's what we call their phrases, into their iPad as a whole phrase in those early stages. So something Ella and I were talking about just earlier off air was actually to do with what we call gestalt language processing. So I think when we learn language typically or neurotypical way, it's what we call an analytical. So we learn word by word, we understand what each individual word means, and we learn that way. There's a very, very high percentage of our children with autism who are actually what we call gestalt language learners, which means that they learn in chunks. So they're learning big phrases first, and then they're able to go back and break down the individual meanings of words. So often we have to put in different strategies to suit their way of learning language. It's just a different way of learning language, and we just have to kind of recognize that, hey, there is function in those big phrases. We will get them to a point where they can understand individual words, but how about we work with what we've got now and work backwards that way? So those big chunks are actually really important in terms of and yes, we can do lots of things. Like we can put the phrases into their AAC device, we can use them as low-tech visuals. There's a lot of ways to use visuals in terms of just talking with our children with ASD in general. Yeah, I would always recommend speaking to your speech pathologist about starting with some low tech, so some pictures, keyword sign, give that a go first. It's about just giving your child the best opportunity to get their needs and wants met, and then we start building on from there. The reason for it is there's a lot of research online in regards to, say, if you do use an iPad, for example, them having that, they touch the button, they have that immediate feedback from the voice activation. Mm-hmm. And it actually has been shown to help them with sentence structure and learning words, because they get that immediate verbal feedback. So there's a lot of things that neurologically that iPad is kind of rewiring for them. And consistency is key. Yep.
Yeah. Definitely. Okay. I had no idea. That's really interesting. I had a little bit of training kind of early on in my career to use one of the, I think it was Proloquo, one of the yes. iPad programs sort of thing, but yep. they didn't tell me any of that. So that's extra.
Everything they, I think it's a big thing, is also letting our parents know that everything, once they know certain terms, like we mentioned gestalt language learning, go online. I always recommend our parents, if you know certain terms and you're unsure about it, go do some research on it. Like there's a lot of stuff online now about what is a gestalt language learner, and how does, if you just type in how does AAC support my child, you'll come up with a lot of different amazing articles and things you can read that will really help kind of give you the evidence base. That's important. Make sure, we always want to make sure everything has an evidence base behind it. And hopefully your allied health workers are working in that framework, which I'm sure they are. So,
well, they certainly are if they're an Autism 360 clinician.
Most definitely. Right? Most definitely.
You're absolutely right. Yep. I wanted to ask kind of before we wrap up, you mentioned a little bit about the comprehension difficulties that kids with echolalia might be having around language. What do you think might be some easy ways that parents can tell if their child might be having comprehension difficulties with the language that they're using?
Yep, that's a really good question, because often it can be masked very easily. So often what our parents assume is that when a child, and our, like I said before, our children have great photographic memories and great ways of, and great rote memories, like they can remember numbers and letters and planets and colors. Like that's a real amazing strength that I wish I had. But we want to really, the key word in any type of communication is functionality. So we want to make our children functional communicators. So I guess what we really need to understand in from a speech pathology framework is that it's very, very hard to learn new vocabulary if we don't have an understanding of the meaning or the context of what that object is. So we need to understand first. There is a lot of models, you know, in language development that you learn at university and you want to apply. And one of those is that we want our kids to have good receptive language. So often we get caught up on, parents will come to me saying, I just want my child to talk. I just need them to be talking in a few sentences, which is completely, completely fine. It's just everything that we do want. But sometimes we also need to drill down into, okay, what are they understanding? And let's have a look if they're really understanding. So one way I like working with my kids, say they're a little bit further along and they love reading, for example. There's a lot of ways you can gauge if your child understands. So are they able to follow directions? For example, sorry, I went off the tangent of reading. I'll come back to that. But are they able to follow directions if you go, go get your shoes and go get your shirt and come back to me? Are they able to do that? So that's a really good way of gauging. Are they able to follow like one stage instruction, one and two stage instructions? That's a good way of gauging functional receptive ability. Reading books, you can read a book together. And at the end of the book, you can ask a question. Who were the characters in the book? Are they able to answer that? Because some children can read but not really comprehend what they've read. And they're two very different things. So asking them very simple questions. What were the characters' names? Are they able to, what happened here on this page? Are they able to come back and retell what they've just read? So if you find that there's a bit of difficulty in that area, are they able to, and if they can't express, can they point to who the characters are? Can they use other methods to try and show that they've understood? So we really do concentrate a lot on expressive language, but we really don't want to forget comprehension and the understanding behind that.
Interesting. I wonder, you know, there's so little, I don't know, there's so little information kind of given to parents at the beginning of their journey. You know, I think it would be so much less bewildering if parents, or if it was even just kind of widely known that like this isn't a non-communicative strategy that your kid is using, like your kid's using this as a way to communicate, like feel positive.
Yeah, exactly. And I think also often when our children are having struggles, you know, what I would say verbally communicating, we need to find the ways that they do communicate. So through gestures or body language, and we need to, a lot of our kids with ASD do in this way, and we need to celebrate those because those are a huge win. I've worked with some little kids who have a real hard time pointing or using gesture to communicate. So that's where we kind of start. So you need to see your child, meet them where they're at is pretty much the best advice I can give. And don't just go along the journey with them and enjoy them. So we can often get caught up in this big therapy loop.
Yes.
So the biggest piece of advice is have fun with your child. Make sure whatever you do, there's an element of fun. You're building connection. You're building emotions. You're enjoying that little one because they're going to be big and off to school before you know it. So please don't get too caught up in the therapy relationship with your child. Please always try and have fun with them and just love them as the little people they are. So
absolutely. And I think one of the biggest things that we're constantly saying at Autism 360 is that kids do well if they can. You know, if a kiddo is struggling with something, it's not because they are trying to frustrate you. It's not because they are, you know, purposely trying to get under your skin. Kids do well when they can.
Exactly.
One of our big things. So
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. And as we wrap up, any kind of big takeaways or action points do you think parents and carers should be thinking about this week?
Definitely. So I think last week I talked about starting to see echolalia as a functional communicative tool. So that's a big thing. It does have function. You might need to do the detective work. Something you actually can do is write down their phrases and then try and put together the context of what it is. That's a really good way, because often we can forget the context in which things were said. And sometimes things are said out of context a lot of the time, especially with delayed echolalia. So write down what they're saying. Go back and think about what they were doing. And then days or months later, you might go, oh, okay, that's what they were trying to communicate. Yeah, so write things down, take notes. Less questions, more comments, always my big thing. Comment on what they're doing, comment on what you're doing. Mum's cooking, I'm cooking. So give them lots of verbs and lots of descriptive words. And if you feel you're ready for it, please consider helping them communicate visually and through AAC, augmentative and alternative communication. At the end of the day, it's really about what's going to help our child not be so frustrated, and visuals actually do play a role in helping them. At the end of the day, we want them to be able to be less frustrated and get their needs and wants met. So please have a chat to your speech pathologist or whoever you're working with around if AAC or visuals would be a good option for your child.
I have this really cute story. It's totally not mine, but there's this gorgeous, I guess it's sort of a blog and Facebook group called Finding Cooper's Voice. Have you heard of it?
I have not.
Yeah, they're great. They're a family who share their journey of their son Cooper, who has non-speaking autism, mm-hmm. and he uses an AAC to communicate. And his mum, she's just a wonderful storyteller, and she tells this story of, I think it was last year sometime. Yeah, it was on her most recent birthday. So okay. Cooper, he's totally non-speaking. He can elicit some sounds when he's motivated to, but for the most part, he uses his AAC. Mm-hmm. And his mum had kind of come downstairs in the morning, and it was her birthday. And she sort of excitedly said to him, "Oh, Coops, it's my birthday," or whatever. And Cooper didn't really respond verbally or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And she was a bit disheartened, you know. She'd hoped for maybe a hug or a smile or something like
yep.
that. But nothing from Cooper at that time. Anyway, mm-hmm. she was making breakfast and Cooper comes over, and he had found his favourite episode of, is it Magic George? No, Curious George.
Curious George. Yep.
And he put the iPad in front of her face, and he played this particular section of this particular episode of Curious George where they all sing happy birthday to Curious George.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Isn't that awesome? Like,
yeah. Yeah. And that's it. And always celebrate those things with your child. And it's really hard. It's really hard as parents, because I was having a chat about hearing, you know, mummy and daddy and I love you and all those wonderful, wonderful words that we want to hear from our children. So please understand, we do really understand those, really how emotive communication is key to everything, isn't it, in what we do. It can be a very emotive experience. So
Absolutely. Thank you for spending time with me today, Jo. I really appreciate this. And if any of our listeners are interested in picking Jo's brain a little bit further about echolalia or anything to do with speech, really, please do drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you. Next week, we'll be back with another topic that's relevant to what autism parents think about. So until then, think 360.